This is a Momentum Media production.
Investing insights with Right Property Group, exploring trends in real estate and helping property investors gain financial security.
Oh, g'day, how are you going? It's Phil Tarrant here. I'm co-host of Investing Insights, the Right Property Group. And as I was listening to that guitar riff, which is quite catchy, I must admit, we always play, even though we're not doing this live, we always play the introduction to get us into the mood. And I was sitting there thinking during that guitar riff, I know sort of what I want to talk about today, but I really got no idea how I'm going to introduce this this topic, because typically it just comes out of my mouth, and I'm a bit tongue-tied at the moment because I've been chatting to my co-host beforehand and they've been giving me a bit of a hard time. So maybe they got me on my back foot. Maybe I don't know which direction to go with this particular one, Steve Waters and Victor Kumar, who are the directors over the Right Property Group, in this latest episode of Investing Insights, the Right Property Group. But horses for courses, and Stephen is an equine connoisseur, will appreciate that, saying that mantra more than most, because this property market that we're in right now, Steve, and every single time I jump into a taxi, every time I sit at a restaurant and chat with people, every time I go to a dinner party, every time I go to a cocktail party, people sort of who know that I operate in and around property will give me an opinion, and they'll ask me what I think, and my pretty much default position is, I don't know. What makes you think I know? And I go, well, you know, you host one of the biggest podcasts in Australia around property. I go, yeah, that doesn't give me license to actually express my views. Now, to be fair, I can be quite opinionated on property sometimes, and that is sometimes supported by people, or some people think I'm an idiot. So join the club. I'm not too bothered about it, but it is absolutely one of those markets, Stephen. I've been knocking around and around property for a decade now, probably a couple of market cycles, and it's as prevalent as it ever has been, the opinions on property and all the reasons why you shouldn't or shouldn't be investing in property right now. Every armchair critic is telling you that. Every single economist across the land, some of them good, some of them indifferent, some of them not so good, are telling you what you should and shouldn't be doing. I'm fatigued by it all, guys. Absolutely fatigued. I'm done with the commentary around it. I've been talking about it for so long now in this particular upwards market cycle. And at any given day, you can sit on one side of the fence and argue for or against property investment. And I reckon most Australian investors are probably feeling the same. They're just what do we do? What do we do, Steve?
It's interesting, right? Like, everybody's got an opinion. They're like eyes. Everybody's got at least one of them.
Mm.
Preferably two.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of, and sometimes they're looking the different directions. And I guess that's the flavor of today's podcast, is that there is such conflicting opinions, data, news stories and the like. And it would be obvious to a lot that most are confused as to what is the direction of real estate, of property investing, of the economy from a macro and micro level. And there is, I guess, a state of flux between people's ears. Like, people just don't know what to do. And you can see that in the media stories every second hour of the day. An interesting one, like, we had the SVB bank collapse. I think there's another three that have been bailed out in the US. And the reversals of opinion just in and around interest rates that follows that has been quick and sharp. So the US, I guess, commentators are now betting on a rate cut sooner rather than later, and so too are the banks here. Yet if you read the other side of the ledger and the data and the commentary around what's happening in our own localized economy, being Australia, yeah, there are some that are saying, yeah, but it's got to happen sooner rather than later, these rate cuts, which brackets will perpetuate a market. And then there's the other side of this with their opinions that say, well, the economy's still very strong. Jobs numbers are great. We actually think that the RBA will continue to increase, and we're probably further away from what we refer to as the terminal rate. Now, all of that, I guess the reason I say that is quite important, because it's confusing people. And just when you think you've got a firm opinion, not yourself, but the general public, a firm opinion on what is going to happen next, you'll read something else. that's dished up to you and confuse you and perhaps change your own opinion. But one thing is for sure, no matter what the economy is doing, no matter what the components of the market are doing, Vic and I would be definitely in agreement with this, as you would, because you've been there, done that, is that the market is between your ears. There is always an opportunity.
I absolutely agree with that, Steve. And you know, over the weekend, talking to a few agents, going to a few auctions, you know, one of the similar commentaries that are coming out is that most agents are still doing the volume, although it's a little bit harder to shift them straight away. And one of the comments that came to light was that it's an interesting economy, yet still strong property market, right? It's just a matter of people that have gone through this journey before, they can see the opportunities. And if I can take your analogy, Steve, of the eyes on the market and the vision on the market, there are three really simple types of investors or opinion formers in this market today. One is the one that's short-sighted or has tunnel vision and therefore can only look at and will only take into account the headlines and form their opinions accordingly. The others are perhaps, 20-20 vision, but in that reverse, seeing that, you know, it was great before COVID, we should have bought then, and they're always reverse analyzing to say they should have done it, right? The real investor, the someone that can adjust to what the market's doing. So not necessarily adjusting their investing style, but adjusting the strategy to suit the market. They're the ones with the Polaroids, right? So they can shut out the glare, they can shut out the noise and keep things pertinent to themselves. And like you said, Steve, therefore they keep the market within between the ears, but in the right format. Not allowing all of that external noise to come in.
I think it's really a polarizing moment. Getting back to the vision analogy, and whilst we've been doing this for some 20 years or thereabouts, there hasn't been a market like this where we've got, I guess, as much conflicting opinion. As much, I guess, now what I would classify as experienced investors, because investing is and has been around in volume for probably, I want to call it 10 to 13 years, like because of that whole availability of information and technologies we keep referring to. You know, back when we first started, as a side note, it was a secret society. You didn't know another investor. It wasn't talked about. It was just this private society, no pun intended. But if you fast forward to today, because of that availability of information, because of the availability of data that we all have privy to, it just can confuse the situation even more so than it ever has. And I mentioned data quite deliberately because it is such an important piece of the puzzle. However, I truly do believe that not enough people know how to decipher the data. And that's where the gold is. And a really good example of that is I was reading the other day I'm not sure if it was one of your news articles, Phil, or perhaps someone else's, and about a particular area, I won't name it, and how it is done very well and will continue to do very well. And the data backs that up, right? So I'll give that the tick of approval, I guess. However, I know the area intimately and it's not a region. Sorry, I'll rephrase that. It is not an area that I would park my money as an investor without the knowledge that I have. Now, what I mean by that is when we look at the data in isolation on that particular case, the region / suburb has performed very well and will continue to do well. So it's a rising tide lifts all ships. However, in that very suburb, if you don't get the right street, then the sustainability of your investment is going to be more than halved once that, I guess, perpetual motion stops. So when we have that data collection and people invest without really knowing how to understand it, decipher it, and have that overlay of ground truth, as we often refer to, it can actually be a very dangerous piece of the puzzle if you don't give it the respect, the time, and the understanding that it deserves. And I guess you could even tie that back to the to us referring to the market is between your ears as well. So it's very important that people understand it implicitly, rather than just taking something at the back of a magazine or a news article or a general data point and pouring their hard savings and potential debt into an area, my opinion.
That's a good point, Steve. And the market being in your ears is a positive and a negative, right? And the negative is being consumed with the amount of information that's out there, which will stifle investment decisions. But then there's also that bias that you're talking about, where I reckon I could probably pick what you're talking about. If I pick it, will you say yes or no?
You've taught me well in the world of public exposure, Phil. Yeah. I cannot confirm nor deny whatever's going to come out of your mouth next.
is it somewhere around the border zone between New South Wales and Victoria?
No, wrong direction.
Okay. All right.
Wrong direction.
All right. So are you talking New South Wales?
No.
Okay. All right. Anyway, it's not where I was thinking, but I think very, very similar concepts you're talking about there. And this is this bias of going, I think this place is great and I'll use property data to prove that it is a great spot. But the utility of your money putting into a market to get the returns you want versus other areas. And that's the gold. That's the gold dust of property investing. But this environment we're operating in, you spoke about the Silicon Valley Bank, Steve. And I'll counter your points you made around that to give some sense for property as an asset class. Now, the collapse of that bank and some regional banks coming out of the US and now sort of European Swiss banks, is that's a big deal, right? The health and the integrity of the banking system in Australia is a huge enabler and an asset for property investors. You know, most of the money kicking around the Silicon Valley Bank was people doing massive capital raises and overvalued tech stocks, chucking it in a bank to be drawn down to use for you know, tech development advancement. The particular nature of that bank and some of its sort of focus or policies around where it thought it should be investing its money and how it should be operating as a bank, misaligned where they were allocating their capital, and they've gone to the wall. Now, you know, when was the last time you had a run on banks here in Australia? I can't remember it.
I don't think we have
happening. Yeah. Whereas, you know, people lining up out the front of these banks to try and their cash out. Now, yeah, banks too big to fail, right? You know, the federal government in the US come out and said we're gonna guarantee everyone's deposits, irrespective of how big they are. I think the threshold was 250, whatever, right? So this is the banking system. Now you said that extrapolate out to some other regional banks. This is the application of tightening monetary cycle and rising interest rates and inflation, right? Like when people start the hurt, the central banks start going, oh, maybe we're getting there somewhere. But then you sort of spoke about all the strengths of the Australian economy and how that will be therefore countercyclical to maybe what might be happening in the US. And there is now a cause and a case for increased interest rates in Australia. So you sit there and you think about all this sort of stuff and you go, where's the safest place to stick my money? You know, is it going to be in the equities market here in Australia or globally? Most property investors I know come down to the base and the default position that property is a pretty good place to put your money in Australia. And over time, you need to go back and look at the ebbs and flows of property markets, but it's a safe and stable investment. So, you know, this notion of the market is inside your ears, you know, there's a bias there saying, just put your money in property. Just put it there. It's the best place for it. It's going to be safe over time, et cetera. But so many people get stuck with this notion, this idea around the need to diversify, Victor, you know, the need to spread their wealth, the need to invest in other asset classes, all this sort of stuff, right? Like it is stifling the overemphasis of information and decision-making in property. So it comes back to the point, is property a good asset class? Because it is a lot easier once you get rid of the noise, Vic.
Yeah, well, the first thing I'd say is that property can hurt too, right? Mm-hmm. And can hurt big time. And the reason it would hurt is if you're just following the herd in terms of investing via media articles and investing beyond your means, right? And so what does that really mean? It means that you're following on someone else's success before you take stock of what your financial fingerprint is, you know, what your tolerance is for that debt level, what your tolerance is for that negative cash flow that property is going to bring. What are the other factors that are influencing your ability to hold on? Because we'd all agree that with the right selection of the properties, time does the magic in terms of the heavy lifting, in terms of the massive growth that you're likely to see. But if you can't buy yourself time, this is where you'd go wrong. So the first thing we would need to look at is the liquidity factor of your investment, right? So if I take the example of the bank, they ran out of liquidity because they had to run on cash. So therefore, they collapsed. If you drill it back to your own personal circumstances and the property is, in inverted commas, your bank, you need to make sure there isn't a run on the cash. So the ability to sustain the higher interest rate, the ability to sustain the repairs and maintenance that will occur in any properties. And it's a cyclical thing. If you've been an investor long enough, you'll understand that as you buy a property, depending on whether it's an established or brand new, you have your teething problems for the first 6 months, your niggling repairs and niggling warranty calls. And then it falls into a rhythm. And then generally you have, say, after a decade, the use-by date of your appliances, the property gets knocked around a bit. So you need to spend more money on it. So you need to budget for all of those things. Then importantly, you need to look at what your own metrics are in terms of, are you an alarmist investor? So in other words, as soon as you see these headlines of banks collapsing, economy weakening, interest rates still going up, are you going to offload? And you're generally offloading just before dawn, right? So you've done all the heavy lifting, but you're not really seeing the value of your heavy lifting because you've executed too early. You need to be looking at it. And then you need to also be looking at what's happening in life, right? Family, employment, all of those things.
It's sort of aligning that back with SVP or the Silicon Valley Bank and the run on cash. Yeah, which could, I guess, have a domino effect if they let it, which they won't, right? There's a guess. But the real concern there was the contagion effect, mm-hmm. is just how much it would emanate outwards. And you could also correlate that back to property as well. Further to your point, Vic, around are you a panicking investor? There's interest rates, you've read the news, you've made an assumptive decision, and that contagion effect has.
And who are you talking to?
And who are you talking to has put you into the seat of wanting to sell before necessary. Now, I want to be very clear. There are those that need to, and there are those that will, even though they don't need to, even though we're not seeing that mass volume yet. But the opposite effect of that is during COVID as well, where we had, you know, that whole FOMO market and people were paying silly dollars for silly properties in some cases. And it would be that data that is reversing now that is having a general effect and therefore, I guess, feeding the uneducated opinions of some of the media and even some of the data warehouses. Now, I don't mean that they're uneducated in its true sense, but what I mean by that phrase is that there's no real truth or there's no digging deep enough to disseminate the different types of properties on the different streets, going back to my first the example of not New South Wales or down on the southern border, Phil. And it starts to play with the overall data, which then creates a news story, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then backing the track up all the way back to the market is between your ears. And Phil, I'll use you as an example. So when we went to auction for your first property way back in the day.
2011.
Yep, that was against really what the data was telling us, but it was also against what the general public opinion was at that point in time. And even though the fundamentals were solid, even though the potential upside was more than apparent, I remember that auction and there probably being 100 other people in the room. Admittedly, though, there was probably four or five other properties off memory that were up for auction on the same card. But there was a collective there. And that collective at that point in time were well-heeled, not well-heeled, but well-educated people in terms of their opinion on the market, their understanding of data, and the direction into which something being the asset was going to go. Now, you fast forward that today and we've got exactly the same effect. There is a cohort of people out there that are just absolutely chomping at the bit to re-enter the market. And I say re-enter the market because their desire is there, but perhaps their ability isn't due to servicing capacities. But when they have that ability, they will dive headfirst back in. And then, of course, there is a cohort that are probably sitting back reading the news stories at this point in time and saying, I told you so. And there's blood on the streets.
Yep.
Everybody's selling. Everybody's going to walk out of this backwards. And it's just not the case. Once again, data is one thing, ever so important. We consume it like oxygen. However, you need to align the truth, the ground truth, with the data so that you can absolutely make it, I guess, help you in your finite decision so that you're not speculating debt. Because at the end of the day, the mother of all evil is when you speculate debt. And unfortunately, some people have done that.
I think the important thing to recognize over here is, Phil, when you bought, you actually had a higher interest rate than what you've got right now. Right, yeah. And what's happened in between those two points is that we went into emergency rates during COVID, which dropped the cost to operate substantially, and even some experienced investors got caught out with that because we tend not to look too far into the future, right? And we tend to look at more immediate. And the more immediate at that time was that you could get your 1.99, so you could get your 2.6 as your interest rate. But now that we're traveling towards normalcy, there is a bigger gap between what the operating cost was 2 years ago to what it is right now, which is where people are perhaps hurting or unsure in between in the head in terms of how the market's panning out. Adding to that is the fact that we still haven't compensated for the assessment rate as yet, because if we did, we'll counteract what RBA is trying to do in terms of the economy. And so when you're not able to borrow money, you're not able to access the equity as freely, it does tend to knock the wind out of the sails for most investors because they haven't planned for such an occurrence. And they're more of a rolling investor. They're rolling with the punches along the way in terms of what the rates are, what the economy is, what the trend is at that point in time, and what's the biggest media articles. So I'll focus my attention and energy to in that direction. So once you take all of that away and do a bit of forward planning, and one of the things that Steve and I continually say during any podcast or Facebook Lives that we do, and invariably it does creep up, is looking after your cash flow. Because if you look after your cash flow both now and what it would be in terms of constraints in the future, good or bad, you can weather all of these fluctuations that the market throws at you. Because if you've been investing long enough, you will see and weather all of these fluctuations to come out on the other end of a couple of cycles and reap the reward of your efforts.
I think that's a very good point. And if you use Phil once again as an example, let's go back to that property, the first property, which I'm going to draw upon my memory here now. So that was at the end of the GFC, give or take.
Are you talking about that North St. Mary's?
So yeah. What was that, 220 off memory? How good am
I? Yeah, I think it was about 229 maybe. Thereabouts. Yeah.
Okay, let's go higher. Let's go 230, right?
Yeah.
So from that moment in time, we still had at that point in time where I purchased for you at auction in a full house, there was still huge amounts of negative sentiment. Then we had APRA crisis. Then we had a potential election crisis. Then we had COVID, and then we come to today. But if we look at the purchase price from what year was that in? That was 2011.
And
you fast forward to today, That's tripled.
Yeah.
Tripled in value. Even with those multi-crisis events that we've had from the day the hammer dropped through till today. Now, those big events were fact. They happened. The area's fundamentals were factual as well, hence the growth that it's had. But if we bring that into a line today, now not the asset, but have a look at the good or the big news stories, which is helping shape people's opinion, and this ties in with what Vic was saying. Choosing the news that you consume is going to clearly form your opinion. Now, we happen to be the half glass full kind of people, I guess, because this is our asset class. You know, this is our, I guess, all in asset class for the most. So we tend to look at all news, we look at all data, but we choose to be, I guess, absorbing to our core, not the positive stuff, but the factual stuff, the stuff that we know is fact. So if we look at what is, we know what all the negative stuff is today, right? So we, and this comes into the market is between your ears. So we know that there's higher interest rates. We know that there's tougher servicing. We know that there's a potential of a recession. We know that there's banks collapsed in the US. We know of someone that is unfortunately having to live in a car or a caravan because they can't get rental accommodation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? That's all fact as well. But on the other side of the ledger, what about the good news stuff that is going to create the market of tomorrow for the asset class? And tomorrow could be literally tomorrow, or it could be in a year or 2 years' time. So let's examine some of that good news stuff, which is factual. Housing supply in terms of its construction drops to the lowest point in 15 years, like GFC levels. Our population growth is quickly becoming at record levels. We've had 300,000 last year. The government's committed to another 200,000 this year. And student accommodation or students coming in is going to be circa 500,000 people. And we've got, I think, as of last month, some 35,000 properties across the country for rent. It doesn't compute. We know that we also have an undersupply going further into that point. We know that it's a hardcore asset. We know it's a great asset in terms of inflation. It helps with inflation in terms of, well, it doesn't help with inflation, but it's a safer asset class when there is inflation that is around us. So choosing the news that you choose to consume, I think, is going to have a massive effect, clearly, on which rein that you pull. And I think there are a lot of people out there that shouldn't do anything. They should wait and see. They should chase the tail of the tiger when it happens. But you'll find that the more experienced, the more successful investors, and those that have prepared themselves for this point in time, as we've banged on over many a podcast around liquidity and the like, and servicing capacities, keeping it real, you'll find those people are in the market today while they can. And while most people aren't.
One of the things that we always advocate is that, you know, you need to be investing using fundamentals, right? But as cycles change, as focus changes, the fundamentals that you spend more time on changes as well. So in the initial stages of investing, you're perhaps looking at more of the acquisition type properties where cash flow is still very much in the forefront at all phases, but you're perhaps tipping the balance more towards your growth type properties as opposed to your more cash flow type. You still need to look at both sides of the equation within your means. But as the portfolio progresses, you also need to look at the fundamentals of protecting the asset as well, protecting what you've got. So taking it more of a defensive approach towards investing, as opposed to in the earlier days, you may be looking at taking a little bit more of a riskier approach, not unnecessarily risk, but calculated risk based on data, based on your circumstances. But as the investing flows on, you've got two things that are happening. You're getting a strong asset base with perhaps a strong demand on cash flow or a strong delivery on cash flow, depending which way the portfolio has been pitched. And then secondly, and importantly, you're also progressing in life, age-wise and family-wise and career-wise. So they need to all tie in together. This news in the media and this changing environment is all but a flash in the pan when you really look at it from a longer-term view. And the really good example is very much your first property that you bought, Phil. You know, if you look at it from a viewpoint of a lot has changed in that in since we bought the property. And if we were to go back today and buy the same property, yes, of course we'll be paying far more higher than what we bought it for. But the fundamentals would still remain the same. But perhaps if we took your financials from back then and applied it to the property today, that may not be the right property at that point in time because things have changed. You've got kids, you've got lots of other commitments. You've also aged a little bit. We're doing Zoom, so I can see that it's not as graceful. But you know, these things we need to be taken into account when we're doing the asset selection. One of the common things people get wrong is that they come in for the second round of purchasing and they try and repeat what they've done 10 years ago to today. There needs to be some adjustments.
It's the old adage, Victor, that everything's changed, but nothing has changed, right? And this goes to the point around the inherent integrity of property in Australia as an enabler for wealth creation, right? And that hasn't changed. What has changed is you talk about personal circumstances and then macro, microeconomic factors change all the time. You know, you got to embrace change. Change is change. Change is good. It's all comes down to what goes on in between your ears about your view and opinion towards it. Now, you know, this idea of the market is between your ears from a good and bad point, but we're pretty much taking that from a negative connotation, right? Like the market is between your ears and therefore you're not doing stuff or you're not doing stuff you should do. How do you have a consciousness, Vic, to know that the market in between your ears is holding you back from doing stuff? Like, how do you have that awareness? Is it a self-awareness or someone got to give you a kick up the bum and say, you're looking at everything wrong?
It is a bit of both, right? So one of the important things is that every elite athlete, every successful person has a coach, right? So who is your coach in your portfolio? That's what you need to look at first. And does your coach have the runs on board in terms of giving you the direction, the tick boxes for your circumstances, what you need, right? So you may have several coaches, you know. You may, if I take an analogy of someone that plays soccer, you may have a fitness coach as well as a skills coach, right? Two different coaches. They may not be the same person. They may be the same person. So you need to look at that. And then you also need to be looking at it from a viewpoint that when you did get started, you had a goal, right? And that goal does morph over a period of time as your experience increases, as your outlook changes and all that sort of stuff. You've got to take those two parallels into account. Do regular reviews of both in terms of going back to the coach or the property strategist in this case to check in to say, hey, should I buy? Shouldn't I buy? Should I work back on my portfolio? Should I look at my mortgages, restructure my mortgages? All of those moving parts, right? And then the strategist then gives you based on a overall, and sometimes it takes fresh eyes to not your, because you're so immersed, needs an external person that doesn't have the clouded vision of being within the portfolio to say, okay, I really think you shouldn't be buying in today's market, or I think you should really accelerate, or maybe we need to go back and restructure a few things. Once you've done that, then you look at, okay, am I still on track to my goals? And often life gets too busy and you realize the whole year's gone. We're pretty much in April now. And it's a quarter of the year gone already. The question is, if your goal this year was to look at adding to your portfolio or making your portfolio more efficient, what have you done in this quarter? You should really be a quarter of the way into your goals.
Good point, Vic. Well, to that point, for those that are even contemplating purchasing, as an example, in your example, they should be in the midst of a lot of work right now. a lot of pre-work. You know, if that goal is to purchase in the new fin year, as an example, or Q3, if you're just going to wait for things to fall into your lap in terms of finance, because essentially that's what it's going to be around, then you're going to miss, you know, your opportunity, whatever that looks like to you. But I also want to make just a comment in and around coaches. Yeah, and the analogy where you had the soccer coach, you had the fitness coach, might be the attack coach, whatever it may be. We are very, very much in tune with that. But I also believe you can have the right coaches, but if they can't collaborate, it's probably a negative to you. So if we look at what we do as an example, so where the property investment advice, so we'll call that, you know, let's call that a coach. Well, that part of the wheel, well, that spoke in the wheel, so to speak, where the buyer's agent, so that's another spoke. There's two spokes there. There's an investment property investment advice, then there's buyer's agents. They're quite different. You should have a very savvy finance broker, but the broker is also just a cog in their own wheel. They need to have the support behind them and the right team. So hopefully your finance broker is doing what you do, and that is invest, because then there's more of, I guess, an emotional attachment to that part of the process. So you want the property investment advisor, you want the buyer's agent, in our opinions, you want a very good broker, you need a very good accountant, you need a very good solicitor / conveyancer. And they're probably going to be different for each state a lot of the times due to licensing. And then you could probably expand on that even further. But ultimately, if each of those people can't collaborate based on your circumstances, because you as the purchaser and their client, you're the epicenter. And too many times we see the coaches pulling in different directions.
The egos step in.
The ego step in, and perhaps they don't understand what you're trying to achieve and truly understand your circumstances as much as they should. And to be fair, that probably can't happen unless there is collaboration. And Phil, let's use you as an example again. So how many times have we sat down with the accountant, with the broker, with yourself, and doing a portfolio review so that we're all pulling in the same direction? And here's a really good example, not you. Sat with a client not long ago, and we did this very thing. We had the collaboration, and the husband and wife had some changing circumstances due to planned family addition in the next 12 or so months. And on the call was myself, the accountant. There was a fin planner as well, and the mortgage broker. And the accountant said, "Look, you know, I'd like you to create a trust and purchase in a trust for XYZ reasons." The broker said, "Look, based on today's circumstances, it's going to be really hard to get adequate financing for that trust being so new and their circumstances." The fin planner was probably giving their 2 cents worth in and around protection and what have you, as they should. Myself, as knowing what the portfolio needed, so this is void of what I guess the peripheral intricacies in and around entities and what have you, but the portfolio needed a certain type of property in their circumstances, and I stress their circumstances, that had the ability to add secondary incomes or subdivide, retain and build in the future. And once the accountant knew what the portfolio needed, they changed their opinion on what the entity should be. So rather than a trust in their situations, they want it to be tenants in common, both on title, split, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. My point is, none of that would have happened had there not been the collaboration there and then, rather than a 4-kilometer-long email chain of indecisive information and everyone pulling in different directions. So if your team, coming back to Vic's point, if your team isn't wide enough and, more importantly, can't collaborate, you actually don't have a team. What you have is individual service providers pulling in different directions.
And that's a really important point, Steve. And the property investor, it's incumbent on them to lead the team, right? Just because you choose to build a team doesn't mean you outsource responsibility for the effectiveness of that team. If anything, it amplifies the responsibility you have to steer that team effectively. And, you know, most most accountants and buyer's agents and property strategists, financial planners, they largely pretty professional and get on pretty well because they understand and appreciate the better the outcome for the client, the more longevity to their relationship with them. So they should be proactive in dealing with other parts of the team. Where you find yourselves in troubles is when there may be sort of potential conflicts where, you know, the accountant might have a mortgage broking arm and it might also have a buyer's agent's arm and it might have a financial planning arm. So they're trying to get the industry talk share of wallet. They want the whole thing rather than parts of it. So that's where you sometimes can find that conflict. So the investor needs to steer it through. And it's hard.
Yeah. I'll add to that, Phil. And I love the comment, share a wallet. Sometimes service providers are about their wallet and their wallet only. And where the problem is, even though the entire space, whether it be accountants, fin planners, brokers, buyer's agents,
professional advice,
strategists, professional advice, a lot of them are very good. A lot of them are absolutely above board, ethical, and the like. There is a portion that isn't. That's really unfortunate. So when you do create the team, you need to go deep in terms of who they are, what they are, what associations, you know, indemnity insurances and experience and the like, so that you can comfortably have a handover of trust to them on your hard-earned potential millions of dollars. And that's that sleep at night fat. But ultimately, it is going to be up to you as the consumer to drive the team and lead the team.
Yeah. And you get better at that over time once you get more experienced. And, you know, and to be fair, that the team should be really forgiving of the investor, but still hold the investor to account, because essentially in many ways that's the service that they're paying for. So it's a very symbiotic relationship. And you might need to go through a whole bunch of different people till you find someone that you click with. That's okay. Don't worry about it.
I think that's a good point. And I think we all have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not everybody, but there does come a time where some people have a use by date because their direction changes as well. But that also helps form coming back to the market between your ears, because I know of some accountants that are extremely bullish on property at this moment in time.
Yeah. It's really funny. I went to a thing the other week. Let's call it a financial wealth, private wealth type firm, right? They have their own funds and they provide services, everything from SMSFs to all this sort of stuff. And I was having a beer with some of the people in this business afterwards, and I asked them about property. I went, oh, so, you know, what are you guys doing in property? Oh, we don't touch property. We don't
trust. Like, they're advising on property.
Really good firm and outfit. And then you look at quality advice review, which I'm sure you guys have been across in terms of how they're trying to sort of remove some of the red tape and arduous sort of reporting and compliance work around financial planning, which I think is good. It's swung, pendulum swung too far after all, commission around it all. But I said, oh, well, what are you doing around property? It's like, yeah, we don't do property. Don't touch property. You know, so if you end up with, and this is again to the point, if you end up with a community of advisors who are restricted in their attitudes towards certain asset class, and I firmly pull property out as one of them, that can really curtail your ability to create wealth. A lot of financial advisors just don't touch it. I had a financial advisor on the Smart Property Investment Show not that long ago, and I was sort of asking, quizzing it around them, and they're going, well, it shouldn't matter, right? Because financial advisors are paid a fee for service, much like a buyer's agent. So it's not really asset class specific, but typically their lens is everything but property. Historically, that's where we're operated, because that could be, you know, that's the market inside your ears as well, right? It's asset class bias through the community of people that you use as coaches. You know,
very much so. But I believe it's why you should bring them as close as you can once you've found the right ones, because the good advisors will tell you when to perhaps amplify your purchasing, whatever the asset is, and the same good advisors in their own field will also tell you to sit on your hands when you should, because ultimately everything is about you, the consumer, not them, the service provider. But you're right. It all plays into the market is between your ears.
Yeah.
So choose what you consume and who you hang with wisely.
Yeah. And I guess that's, you know, I'll conclude with this, Vic, and maybe give some observations on it. Probably the best way to ameliorate a negative sentiments or stifling your investment potential, the market inside your ears, is to socialize yourself with other people who can potentially challenge or change those mindsets that you have. And that is largely professional advisors, right? It's probably a good place to start. It wouldn't be Uncle Jim at a barbecue, right? You know, probably not going to change, give you a step change in terms of changing positively the market in your ears. You want a good market in your ears. You want a positive mindset is what we're talking about to enable change, action, wealth creation. So probably a good place to start, I imagine, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, whenever I'm taking advice, I look at it in terms of where is the advice coming from, right? Is it coming from your Uncle Jim? In other words, media frenzy or opinion? So is it really advice or opinion? The second is it coming from a textbook? So hey, this is the set way we do things. This is the only way we do things. Or is it coming from real life? In other words, the person's got a bit of experience or has got the ability to tap into the experience and has been around for a little while to see the fluctuations of data, fluctuations of circumstances, to then actually form their advice around it, drawing from the years of experience. And that's true advice, that's true direction, that's true coaching.
Excellent. Phil, as we finish, before we go, question for you. I'll put the journalist hat on.
All right.
You can be the opinionated person. The build to rent scenario that the government is quite heavy on, as well as some big business. What is your opinion on where that will end up?
Build to rent?
Yep.
Well, a lot of the structural incentives for property investment is directed at the mum and dads of Australia. I don't know the numbers, 93%, I think, of all investment properties are owned by individual investors. So it's not an institutionalized aspect of how housing is created and sustained in Australia. But to your point earlier on, the rampant immigration, which I think is positive for the nation, and the ongoing sort of health of the economy, which is intrinsically connected with property markets in Australia, we need to view investment property through a different lens, and it needs to be augmented by something else. So I think sort of mum and dad investment, 8% of all Australians, I think, claim some sort of property investment type tax incentive on their tax returns. It's not enough to sustain the growth of Australia. So build to rent, I think, makes sense in an insto point of view. I know the super funds have a lot of money washing around, and it's a pretty safe bet, right? You think about building large scale, and we're not just talking about high rise apartments here. We're talking about sort of greenfields, sort of suburbs, and or aspects of new greenfield suburbs to build to rent. So I think it should be championed and supported, because I don't think there's not going to be enough happening now with mum and dad investors doing the heavy lifting for a housing growth in Australia. It works pretty well in Europe, good investment class for big institutions out there. And we've sort of got the engine here now with a very large development companies in Australia. I think of Meriton, for example, can easily contribute to this moving forward. It's a really nice annuity return on it, considering the stability of property markets and rental returns in Australia, is my view. But I'm not really allowed to have an opinion, mate. That's just some music.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I think this current government, which I reckon is going to be kicking around for a couple of terms, they would curry, to get political for a little bit, that they would curry a lot of favour with a lot of the big construction industries to do large-scale developments around housing. Not only are you ticking a box on giving people places to live and affordable accommodation as well needs to be wrapped up in with that, it's going to be a really nice stimulus to building activity in Australia.
Yeah, I would agree a little. Some I wouldn't. I think depending on how they roll it out will be how sustainable it is for the medium to long term. My fear is that if it doesn't happen correctly, we'll end up with social housing issues again.
Yeah.
I agree with that. And I think that you can't just have it condensed all in one area. I think it needs to be interconnected. I'm not just talking affordable housing. I'm talking to the third of Australians who rent, right? I think you need pockets of, and even if it's a high rise, it should be floors rather than the whole thing. Because you need to, I think this is town planning and social cohesion. You need a really nice intersection of completely owned, mortgaged, owner-occupier and rental accommodations, which create the fabric of any suburb or any regional area in Australia. I think that because it gives choice to everyone and creates that diversity. So it'd be hard to do properly. You know, just building a suburb and just going, okay, that's all, you know, one corporation owns that and we're going to fill it full of rental apartments or houses, I think would create social issues.
I think it'll happen in the towers, not so much in the house and land scenario, but we will see the socioeconomic issues for the towers that they built in the CBDs. Yeah, and because I get, and the reason I ask the question is because I get asked the question a lot, and from our clients, and I've said, look, you know, I'd be very, very wary of purchasing anywhere close to those areas
potentially
for the future.
Well, the problem is though, and that's just basic fundamentals, right? If there's more rental accommodation in any particular area, what does it do to rental prices or the price of your properties? You know, I think build for purpose makes sense. If you end up with a whole tower full of international students, like, you know, location wise is probably smart, it's close to universities, all that sort of stuff. But it's a very, very specific use, right? And maybe if they go down this pathway, it'll be isolated to those type of assets rather than just sort of building large scale rental blocks or towers or suburbs in different areas. It's outside my pay grade to work that out. I'm not an economist. I'm not a population demographer. I'm not a town planner. I'm not like, you know, building cities of the future. I'm happy to give my two cents if anyone wants to know. But
And you always have. But interestingly enough, my two cents is I think it's a load of rubbish personally. I think the concept is great, but I think it's a bit of a rort. That's what it'll be.
Are you saying that because you're worried about the monopoly that individual mum and dad property investors hold over the investment property market in Australia?
Or the not necessarily. Australia?
No, not at all. I'm worried about the behind closed doors deals that are done to get this done and not having, yeah, realistically, the crisis at the forefront. It's more about the dollars, which is what big business is, right? They've got to report.
Well,
to their
I'd add to that, Steve. The biggest issue we have, it's not an issue, but it's structurally how it's always worked, or culturally how it's always worked. The decisions of today are only sort of made on the immediate election cycle. We don't in Australia. We're not thinking generationally. You know, there'll be headlines around, you know, making more affordable housing or making more housing for Australians to beat the house economy. See, where we are thinking generationally is, you know, submarine programs, right? We're talking about 2040, 2050, 2060. You know, our grandchildren, great-grandchildren will be potentially serving on these assets. You know, that's long-term, you know, thinking into the future. And people sit there going, well, we can't think that far out. Well, we should be doing exactly the same thing for property. Why aren't we having those conversations? What's property investment, what's rental going to be looking like in 2040, 2050, 2060? And it's going to cost $500 billion. You know, that's what, you know, the sub-program is going to be, well, they reckon $380 billion. It's going to end up being $500 billion, right? You know, so why can't we have those same discussions around property investment and rental? Don't know anyone's having it, mate.
Because you won't tick all the boxes of all the different opinions from the different parties is the short answer. But an interesting thing that one of the councils in Queensland have done, being the Moreton Bay Regional Council, have taken some good initiative. They're waiving all development fees and infrastructure charges for the short term to encourage development.
And that's what we need.
And this goes back to something I said on a couple of podcasts ago. For this to work and solve the crisis, you need the collaboration between federal, state, and local council. Yeah, now, here's a local council that have said, you know what, we'll take the bull by the horns. We'll do our bit and try to encourage development to help solve this crisis that we're having. Not something that's going to happen by big business in, you know, 5, 6, 7 years and then have this social awkwardness potentially. Like, these guys are saying, doesn't matter who it is, come in, have a crack, in short. Whether it happens or not, because the funding is yet to be seen, but at least they've shown some initiative. Let's hope other councils follow suit.
Great. Maybe that's a podcast for the future.
Correct.
Excellent. Victor, what do people do if they want to have a yarn to you guys?
Certainly. You can reach out to us on the socials or go to our website, rightpropertygroup.com.au, and click on the contact us button. A little bit of a process. So you get to talk to Melissa, who's a very experienced investor. She helps to prepare for your meeting with either myself or Steve so you can get the best of our time. So do reach out on the socials or on the website.
Excellent. Well, we covered a lot of ground there, gents. Get the market out of your head and into active, proactive, positive investing behaviors.
Correct.
That's what I'd be doing. That's Investing Insights, Right Property Group. Have you enjoyed that, everyone? Heaps, heaps of episodes. You can go back if you just found us. Welcome. Been doing this for many years now. We enjoy it. And we'll just talk about what's going on at any given time and what does it mean for property investors. It's very much the rich vein of this podcast is being reactive to market conditions, but viewing it within the lens of long-term generational planning around investing in property and creating wealth. So I hope you enjoy it. You can check these guys out. Just Google Right Property Group. You'll find them pretty easy. And we'll see you all again next time. Until then, bye-bye.
The information featured in this podcast is general in nature, does not take into consideration your financial situation or individual needs, and should not be relied upon. Before making any investment, insurance, tax, property, or financial planning decision, you should consult a licensed professional who can advise whether your decision is appropriate for you.